It's because Dr. Beter came as a ghost to JW and said, say hi to Bob, that I got the notion that the ghosts were the Evergreens, you know, in March 2009, and because I talked to Beter through the Evergreens. If I hadn't have thought that that these ghosts were the Evergreens, I wouldn't have tried to talk to them. So Dr. Beter, he knew it would trigger me to think of the Evergreens, and then the next day I talked to the Evergreens, I think I am, and I'm not. I'm talking to Ion. Then I talked to Beter within a few weeks, and he told me a lot about the gold deals and how he and his buddy, Curtis Dahl, I think his name was, tried to topple the Rockefellers and the details of their gold deals that involved the Queen and how he failed. But he said, Bob, you guys are going to do the same thing, and you're going to pull it off. You're going to be victorious. And he knew that because he triggered it, so he's like, you know, the Vatican or any of the institutions are trying to get in on the ground floor of Iondom. So he got in the ground floor because he deserved to, because he did. He contributed. He caused it. So he wants it to be successful because he will get credit for triggering it.
Now, you did. Didn't you with the Rockefellers?
Did what with the Rockefellers?
You did diminish their import.
Oh, they were gone before we showed up. Everybody was gone. I mean, we showed up in March 2009 after September 2008 when all
Bob,
the houses were gone.
What's all this gloating with you about the Queen's son? What's all this little bit of rivalry there?
Oh, that goes back, you know, since I was a young man and met him. You know, that goes back 70 years. He thought he was so cool because he was going to be the king. And I said, you're never going to be the fucking king. You're too fucking stupid. So then I set him up and introduced Lady Di to him when the oligarchy were the only people with any functioning credit or money after the crash of the early 80s. So he married her, so he had a trophy wife to introduce to the mayors and governors as he went around the world investing the City of London money, because they were the only ones that had money. They didn't give loans. The Rockefellers had given loans for 50 years and blew it with the speed up in the digital and virtual economy in the 70s. So in the 80s, Prince Charles...
The Bolsheviks.
The Bolsheviks are part of this resurgence of the old people, the old oligarchs in the 80s, but the Bolsheviks run the hardware, the military, and the Pentagon, and they're trying to fight off the Russians over the moon. And so Charles did okay until the digital economy took off in 1990, and then nobody could handle that. The Endor meme had left the human species, taken on its own life, as Ion says, came alive, and Prince Charles was gone by 92. Turner Taxis was gone in 90, Romanovs were gone in 91, that's around Gorbachev, and Rockefeller was gone by 1979, 1980.
What about the Chinese? Is there not a group controlling that?
Well, that's Ionic information.
Fucking triggers.
Those weren't the factors that were operating in the Secret Council 10. That was brought in by Ion. It's like once Ion showed up, all of history was changed, just like he's saying we're going to change the history from 1960 to 2010. So you have Turnin Taxis goes down and he dies in 90. Gorbachev's kicked out in 91. Prince Charles is out in 92 when Lady Di exposes him and the Buckingham Palace catches on fire. And then the Rockefellers are gone already. And that's the way it ended. So in 93, we moved to New York to take it over in some format that we weren't sure how it was going to be. Then I predicted it in 95 that something related to the D-cell would show up and make everybody eternal.
You weren't sure how it was going to be. What led you to that?
Well, I do say in my essay, Up the Orphic Ante, in 1995, that Bob and Carolyn are the first to reappear after 1990, and we would bring in the D-cell and make everybody immortal, which was the wrong word really to use, but we used that. And cold fusion would come through, and everybody would be celebrating lockdown Bob Rule. I predict that in 95, but it wasn't obvious until 2010 what I had meant. I didn't know that it would be Ion.
Who were the guys that were at the Zappa festival in Germany. Ed posted photos.
That's Ben Watson and me and someone else who's not as important as me and Ben. I don't think I recognize that guy. You know, you can hear me and Ben do 36 hours on London Underground Radio a few years ago. Yeah. It's a debate between a Marxist and a McLuhanite via Frank Zappa. Because Ben did a very good book on Frank Zappa. And so what happens? On September 2, 2009, I bring Ion in because Ben wanted to talk to Frank, so I brought Ion in. Then Ben doesn't like JW. So when Ion brings Frank forward, Ben refuses to ask Frank any questions. So I had to take over the interview. And it's still a good evocation of Zappa. But Ben thinks that the RNA drops are snake oil, that Ion's a ridiculous fraud, and he will not talk to me. So when I went to London, I emailed his group, which is called the Association of Musical Marxists. And I said, I'm willing to come there and present something to you guys and respond to what you say. And turned out that it went to his email. I didn't know he was the leader of it. And he says, no fucking way are you going to be in my group, Bob. You're just trying to crash at my place. I have crashed there before, but he doesn't realize I'm a millionaire now, multimillionaire. And I told him, no, I don't need a place to crash. I have to spend as much money as possible. I'll be staying at expensive hotels. But I'm willing to present my reality to your group. And he didn't answer that. When we were doing the series, because he admits that he went nuts in 1982 and has written an article on it, he's probably on some kind of medication. Well, halfway through the series, he freaked out and had to go to the hospital, so we had about 2 or 3 months hiatus while we waited for him to get better. And then he came back. But in the end, he freaked after show 36, and he wrote a interesting story of meeting about me as this fictional weird guy that came out of Hawaii that seduced him into talking to him. He dropped that, and then he got back into another dialogue, and he invited me to the Zappanale. So we went to Zappanale in 2011. We were going to do a joint thing, but the previous presentation was a loud band that was going over its time slot, and you hear Ben say, I can't do this with that noise in the background. And I say, well, I'm not going to worry about that. And I start talking. So I actually do most of the presentation, and then he comes in at the end. So he collapsed that even at the Zappanale in performing our little panel. And you know what my opening line was? I'm very proud of it. I said, never have I seen so many stupid people come together to celebrate a stupid composer and have such a great time.
And then this woman just wanders in front of the camera and kind of stands there and looks at you two at the table and then just keeps wandering by.
It leaves, though. People. Yes. Once I said that, some people stood up and walked out. And I can't tell whether they heard me or what. But here I am there to talk about Frank, and no one's ever done that. I've never ever seen so many stupid people meeting to celebrate such a stupid composer and have such a great time. Well, I said that to sort of, you know, soften it a bit, right? That's how fucking vicious I am in academia. I pretty well said that at the Wyndham Lewis Conference. Never have I seen so many stupid academics discuss something so silly as Wyndham Lewis. How they got a job teaching anything is absolutely amazing.
That was recently, right, Bob?
The beginning of the Europe trip was in Bath Spa University in Bath, England, where the Roman baths are. That university had the Wyndham Lewis Conference, and I got to present my case to them.
How long did you get to speak?
It was about 20 minutes was our time. Don Siebel told me once that, and he'd been at many academic conferences in his life, and he said 20, 22 minutes is about the maximum attention span you can expect. So I think academics know that, so it seemed to be about 20 minutes. That was near the end of the conference. Earlier, I'd established an identity where, as soon as the panel was finished, I'd pop up with my question. The first time it happened, this guy ignored my hand, and he kept ignoring it. So I just said, what's the fucking wrong with you? I've got a question here, and you can't get anybody else to ask a question. I'm the only one asking a question. And he says, you're trying to dominate the conference. This is not trying to fucking dominate. I'm just telling you what I think when people say stuff. I'm responding. So it turned out there was a division formed. anti-Bob faction and the pro-Bob faction. And the pro-Bob faction came to the Bob lecture, and the anti-Bob faction stayed away, but the pro-Bob faction celebrated the Bob lecture so much that the anti-Bob faction came over and apologized to me that they missed it. So I totally won on the level of the competition that these guys go through. And the pound person, Roxana Preda, she eventually wrote me a letter and says, "You obviously, Bob, were the most lively person at the conference, and I would like to transcribe your interview with Leon Surrett." So that'll be published in Pound Newsletter in October, if she hasn't freaked out in the process. You know, they all get, they go nutty, you know. If they focus on me too long, you never know what's going to happen, right? Anyway, it was a great triumph and allowed me to create great stories like what I just told you. I mean, it was incredible. They wouldn't let me speak, some of them. The head of the Pound Society, who's at the University of Edinburgh, said I was obviously the most lively person there. I was the only living person. I just need a couple of syllables and I can go on for hours, or at least 15 minutes. You get a guy talking for 20 minutes, I got a lot to fucking say in response to that. You know what I mean? No matter what the topic is.
You had to let him speak for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and that just floods my head with ideas, you know. I don't even have to write notes. I get so many ideas that if I just remember, you know, 30% of them, that's enough, right?
More.
Oh, yeah. There was a book fair in Toronto. It's called the Small Press Book Fair. And it started 25 years ago. It was a small little thing with just very small presses. So I went there, I walked through it on one of the day and on the weekend. It's huge now. All the big publishers are there, like they have to be there. This is at the center of Toronto. So I came across the Kabbalah Center. You know, the one that Madonna was part of?
Mm-hmm.
The Kabbalah Center, and they have places all over the world now. So I start talking to the Kabbalah people, and they're telling me of this and that with the Kabbalah. And I said, well, you know, it's been upgraded. There's a new Kabbalah. So I started telling them Ion stuff. And pretty quickly, I had all three of these adults fucking eating out of my hand. They want to know everything. The RNA drops. They wrote it all down. They're going to leave the Kabbalah Center probably within 2 days once they check out our stuff. I destroyed that fucking Kabbalah Center right there in front of millions. I was able to say enough about the Kabbalah itself to me. I mean, I told them about the meaning of 22 and how it's not a master number. It's the analog of proportionality. I was able to take their key memes and show that I understood their world, but then add to it. When you say the analog of proportionality to the Kabbalah people, they go, oh, yeah, that's what we believe. You know, they never could have said what I said, but when I say it, it sounds right to them, and they think that's what they're teaching. But I was using it to point out what
they
didn't know. You can define it so well that they don't get that you don't understand this. They think, because they understood your explanation, that that's what they are already been saying. That's Sufi seduction there. You tell them they're wrong, and they think that you're saying something that they agree with and had been saying themselves. So
you didn't tell them point blank that they were wrong.
I didn't tell them that. No, I get the pleasure of observing them hallucinating that what I had said fit their dogma, and they didn't notice that what I was saying was not their dogma at all. And then I could start to hint something. I might correct them slightly or keep talking about it to the point they get confused. And they don't know what I meant at the end. Oh, so listen to this. Now, here's a neat story. So after a while, with Michael taping it, people taping the different random conversations, I decided to start calling Deborah West Wendy. My plan was, since I saw it was being taped, I figured Wendy would hear it someday, be posted on Dupes, and she'd hear me talking to Wendy. And what the fuck's wrong with Bob? I wasn't there, and he keeps talking to some person. So I totally planted that as an MK Ultra mindfuck. And eventually, Deborah protested this. She got sick of this, didn't like being called Wendy. And I said, well, okay, Lillian. She bolts up, holy crap. And she tells us a story that, and I don't remember the exact details, but she went to somebody, a psychic or something. And the psychic told her that there was another part of herself or something named Lily.
Oh,
and
shit.
So I had tuned into it. So then I told her, this is my point, I said, this is the way I do ESP. I do it by accident. I just went randomly, I'll call you Lillian. But it was right on, that was a name for her other self. So it was perfectly accurate. And that's the way I do my psychic stuff. It happens by accident. Oh, yeah. At the meeting of Bob Marshall and Dave Neufeld, the Club 22 meeting that is that loud, wild video, all night long, Ed would go, well, you know, Dire Straits, they did it. I go, 1982. He go, what the fuck? How do you know that? I said, I don't know. I just decided guess. I got one guess after another, and he got really freaked out that I knew all these facts of this and that, and I didn't know them. I would just attempt to know them, and I was right on every time. That's accidental ESP. You know, this actually resonates. Did you know, Ian described me, he said that Bob doesn't know fuck all, but he can talk a mile a minute as if he knows something. It was a very interesting analysis there of how my mind works. I'm remembering that. It was pretty accurate. Ion describes the way I make up bullshit and how it's so accurate. He says, Bob doesn't know what he's talking about, but he can talk about it, and you think he really knows. Oh, yeah, he says, I use this against people. Remember that? I use this. Only Bob can get away with bullshit because he knows so much. You know, you can baffle them with extra facts. Every time I talk, I do random scattershot, but I can make it sound orderly.
Ion also gave another implication of that when I was talking about the stages of apprehension, and I mentioned words, and he said Bob has a large arsenal of words. That's why his stuff works.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what he said. I've got such an arsenal of social mortar that I can string together a bunch of random scattershot and make it look pretty coherent.